get started here. This afternoon is an update on the CTEC project. I see we have several representatives here. Who's going to lead us through this one?
I'll start us off here. You want me to stand up here or over there? Right there?
Up there.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Steve Schwann, the VP of Finance and Facilities at Rochester Community Technical College. So I thank you for taking the time today to let us update you on CTEC. We've got representatives from WSU. Tim Mindall here is going to talk about the STEM piece of it. And then from the Rochester Public Schools, of course, we have Superintendent Munoz and Janie Gibson, who are going to go through the CTEC and the curriculum. We've kind of decided that they'll go through Rochester Public Schools will go first, go through the curriculum, then we'll go a little bit about the building layout, and then we'll do a little bit about the STEM, and feel free to proceed with questions throughout the presentation or at the end. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Superintendent Munoz.
He
wants support up there.
But I am going to have a few handouts for you. And I know you'll all be wanting to take all kinds of notes, but we've made copies of the slides for you so you don't have to open that. Alright, well thank you very much. We're really excited to come here and give you an update on CTEC, and as it was mentioned, this is a huge partnership, and it seems like we've been working on this for quite some time, but it's been a great experience for Rochester Public Schools, and just another example of the great partnerships we have with our higher ed partners. And so today, Jimmy and I are going to kind of tag team this, so we'll get started. A little bit of background information. A lot of this you're probably already familiar with. This is a partnership between the City of Rochester, RCTC, WSU, and Rochester Public Schools. And if you remember, it was $6.5 million from the renewal of the absent sales tax is funding this project. And then I just want to make it clear that Rochester Public Schools does not manage the dollars. That's how they're managed by the college system. And they will own the facility. We are just going to lease the facility during the day for our programs. And then they will be using it for their programs. The design of the programs is three purposes. One is to address school to work, post-secondary education, and for those students that are undecided, it gives them an opportunity to explore a variety of different career pathways to make a determination on what they want to do once they get beyond high school graduation. And these are the seven course or pathways that were developed. And I'm really excited about the way these were developed. We didn't sit in the superintendent's conference room and say, hey, let's develop these. We've worked with 35 businesses here in the area, and they helped us develop the career pathways. There's been a lot of conversation in the Rochester area about not having the adequate skilled workforce. So we wanted to design career pathways that would prepare students in the particular direction so they can fill many of the jobs that are currently available in our area. And these are the seven pathways that we came up with, working with those different businesses: agriculture, construction, engineering, health sciences, which is that's a program that we already have out at a different location, hospitality, information technology, and manufacturing. Now, we are going to, we have a phase one and a phase two for CTEC. In the fall, we'll be opening up in the Heinz Center, the STEM Village, which you'll hear a little bit more about here in a minute, engineering, agricultural, and residential construction. And you may ask, why are we doing a phased process? As we started this process, and all the work from those 35 business leaders and the seven career pathways, $6.5 million didn't build a large enough space to accommodate all seven of those career pathways. So we stepped back, had some good conversation with RCTC, and they offered some of their facilities in the Heinz Center where we could bring some of those programs there. So the ones that we can move into the Heinz Center will start next fall, and we already have students that have already enrolled in those courses for next year. But they will be at the Heinz Center, and then the fall of 2016, the new building you will see, and it's going to be located, we'll show you here in just a minute, just east of the Workforce Center that was just recently built. And that particular building will house the hospitality, manufacturing, and health science program that we currently lease space in the northwest part of Rochester. We'll move that program into the new facility. Okay, come on up. We'll talk about STEM Village.
So my name is Tim Endel. I'm a faculty with Monoma State here in Rochester and the education department here, and I'm also going to be directing STEM Village when it opens in the fall. I thought I'd begin just by sharing with you our mission statement. So we have a executive committee that has worked to form this mission statement that's formed with Southeastern Minnesota teachers, as well as representatives from Winona State and RAMPS and RCTC as well. STEM Village is really seeking to offer several different things to support teachers in Southeastern Minnesota to help them offer better STEM education to their students. Professional development, we're going to be offering a STEM certificate, as well as programming at both continuing education or CEU level, and through consulting with whole schools that might be interested in doing that as well. We're also going to have a lending library of equipment and materials and modules that might be cost prohibitive for a particular school or school district to own, that member districts will be able to come and check those things out and use in their classrooms and bring back, as well as providing a place for educators and experts in the sciences, engineering to network and collaborate as well.
And now I'm going to have Janie talk more specifically about the seven career pathways and some of the programming and courses that will be in the different pathways.
So as Superintendent Munoz mentioned before, we had identified seven career pathways through the help of our community members. These teams, the advisory teams, continue to get together to work through what will be happening in each of the pathways and what are the needs. Although we're calling all of this our CTEC pathways, not all of it will happen in CTEC proper. Some of it will happen actually in the comprehensive high schools as kind of the feeder into the CTEC facility itself or into the Heinz Center. So for example, this introduction to ag and natural resources, our ag pathway is based on the CASE, which is the curriculum for agriculture science education. It's a well-respected, it's a noted around the state as well as around the United States curriculum, and very well-respected. So when learners show that they have experience in this, that they've been taught in that, it's a very well-respected and appreciated and gives them a really good foundation in the agricultural pathway. So once a student takes an introduction to ag and natural resources, they can then begin on the pathway to either animal science or plant science, and you can see where later on they do actually intersect and come back together so they can further develop either of the animal or the plant. Likewise, when they get into our construction pathway, at this point in time, because our construction pathway is going to be housed in the Heinz Center, and we are sharing space with the RCTC program, we want to be very, very respectful of them and make sure that they are still able to accomplish the needs that they have for their learners. And so we'll start with the introduction to construction trades, and that will be taught again at our comprehensive high schools, and then we'll go out into residential construction A and B out at the Heinz Center itself. And you can see the different facets. At some point in time, we may branch off into bigger buildings or commercial types of construction projects, but at this point in time, we'll focus just on residential construction to get the pathway up and running. The engineering pathway is one that we use in that, I apologize, the PLTW, that's kind of teacher lingo or whatever that is, Project Lead the Way, which is well recognized. It's developed through the University of Minnesota. And so the engineering and design development is where our learners start. And again, that's in our comprehensive high schools. And then they head off into SIM and civil engineering and biotechnology. Robotics can accompany any of those courses, or it can be a standalone type of course. Health Sciences, as Superintendent Munoz mentioned, has been a very successful program. We have already developed in partnership with Mayo Clinic and continue to run over on the north side of Rochester. We have two pathways there. We have the intro into health sciences careers, and through that, learners can actually get their CNA certification while they are still a high school student. We partner up with local nursing homes and other facilities to get those experiential hours that are needed. And so, as Superintendent Munoz talked about, when you're looking for that school-to-work opportunity, this is one area that we see that in. The other one is the biomedical pathway, and again, biomedical science itself is actually a course that is taught at the comprehensive high schools, and then human body systems actually will be taught at the comprehensive high schools. By the time you get to medical interventions and biomedical innovation, that's when you'll need an alternative schedule, and you'll come on out to the CTEC to get into those higher level of courses. Hospitality pathway. This was also developed really to give the students the lick of the ice cream, to really get them to start thinking about what hospitality is. As we know, there's always the front end, that customer service, the management pieces of things that go on with hospitality, but then also there's the culinary arts pieces of it. And so this program and this pathway at this point in time is really developed to be an exploratory, is developed to really get students started thinking about it. They will get some certification in the ProServe or the CyfStart, so that they will have some certification to take with them if they would choose to go into work right away, but it really is just a beginning exploratory type of thing. Again, none of these are in stone. None of them are fully developed to the level that they will be, because we'll continue to learn and grow as we go, and as the needs of the community change, we'll continue to look at what the needs are. The IT pathway is one that we hear is a great need, but it's also one that's ever evolving and ever changing. So again, this is a very comprehensive, exploratory. It goes a mile wide, not a mile deep at this point in time. It exposes the learner to a lot of the different types of activities that an IT person could potentially participate in, but we would need to take a look at how we would drill deeper if that opportunity is needed. So it really gives them an overview of the information technology, and again, that happens in our comprehensive high schools, and then computer programming or delving deeper into mobile applications will happen out at the CTEC facility. And then finally, the manufacturing pathway. And our manufacturing pathway will actually start with a Project Lead the Way course, the SIM course, and then it'll go into the machine tech or the welding tech pathways. And the SIM course will be taught at the comprehensive high schools, where the machine tech and welding will happen in specialized facilities out in our manufacturing lab in CTEC. So a lot of great opportunities for students and for learners to, again, as Mike said, for some of them, they need to tee up, they need to get ready to go right from school to work, or they just need the opportunity to make better income while they're working their way through college. For others, they want that edge up. They need that additional grounded knowledge in engineering or in pharmacy or whatever to be more competitive to get into the college of their choice or to get into their pathways. And some, they have no idea what they want or they need. So it's just really an exploratory and a chance for them to take a look at what these different pathways are and what are these different career options while they're still a student with us, as opposed to waiting until they get into higher ed and happen to actually pay for those opportunities. So that's just a real quick overview of what will be happening in the facility. I think Shane is going to come and talk to us now about what the facility will look like.
Real quick question for you.
Yes, please.
On the welding in particular, uh-huh. I know some of the trades, they have great facilities, training facilities,
yes.
Shops, and so forth. Are we partnering with them so we don't duplicate some expensive equipment?
It's a great question.
Yeah, and that's something that we're going to talk about later,
okay.
Our next steps. But we are, in working with the chamber and the businesses, it makes sense to us to the equipment that they'll be using out in work, having the same type of equipment that we train them on in our courses. So we're working with them. We're looking for opportunities for businesses who want to donate that equipment. That would be super nice. But we are we want to make sure that whatever they're getting trained on is the type of equipment that they'll be working on in the workforce.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Hickey?
I had a question on the health sciences. Do you still offer the farm tech certification?
We We offer the pharmacy tech. The certification requirements have changed because you need some more hands-on, and so we haven't developed the partnership yet to get that hands-on piece. Okay. So the part of it that we can offer is the background knowledge, so they don't actually leave with a certification, but they leave with the background knowledge so that if they get those hands-on hours, then it's certainly...
Thank you.
But that's something that, as I talk here a little bit shortly about what I envision things looking like, that would be something that we could definitely do.
Mr. Bilger? Question on the health science. Just because many, many years ago, I was in the secondary health occupation courses that went in the high school, went to vocational school afterwards. We did a lot of internships. Will these programs have a lot of internships or opportunities for people to go and experience these programs?
Yeah, that's the part I was kind of leading to is what I would like to see, and it's not going to happen overnight, but once we get up and running, is I would like kids maybe 2-3 days at the most, they're sitting in the classroom, the other 2 or 3 days they're out actually working, doing it. So we currently have some legislation that we have a few bills in that we're working on and trying to give us a little more flexibility so we can use community experts to help us teach some of the standards that we have to address. But that apprenticeship, mentorship is something that really down the road we want to be a big part of this.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, hello everyone. I'm Shane Jensen. I'm the Facilities Project Manager with the Rochester Community and Technical College. So I'll talk a little bit about the facility itself and give you just a real brief update of where we're at in the process. So this is an aerial map of the campus, and the project will be located geographically in the east parking lot of the Heinz Center. This aerial is slightly outdated. There's now the Workforce Center addition that's part of the Heinz Center on the east side. We'll be 60 feet east of the easternmost wall of the Heinz Center, for the Workforce Center, if that makes sense. So out in the east parking lot there, which is in the upper left-hand corner. This is a floor plan of the STEM Village up on the right-hand side there. So that's going to be located in the northeast corner of the existing Heinz Center facility. We'll remodel that existing office suite, and that's where the STEM Village will be located. So some of the priorities that they had was they wanted to be visible, so wanted easy access for the educators when they come to take classes, and also some gathering space outside of the STEM Village. So I think we've accomplished that fairly well, and then we didn't have to increase the footprint of the CTEC building itself. So this is the floor plan as it sits today of the CTEC building. And so I'll just run through real quick. The upper right-hand corner is the hospitality suite. Directly below that to the south is the manufacturing lab, and then directly adjacent to the west is the manufacturing classroom. As we move west, the science lab, which is somewhat incorporated with the nursing program, and then the nursing lab is in the upper left-hand with the general classroom adjacent and to the right. Approximate square footage is 20,000 square feet, so it's about where we initially started with the program. These are some building elevations. So the top elevation is the front. So that's what you would see from College View Drive. And then there's kind of an enlarged entry view directly below and to the left. I believe we've got an east elevation below and to the right. And then we've got the south elevation. So from the campus side, that's what you would see the building. And then we've got a couple of other end views toward the bottom. It'll be brick to match the existing Heinz Center, so it'll be kind of a seamless campus view is what we're looking for on that site. So a quick update. Project team, I listed off the architect and engineering team there. This is a construction manager at risk project, so we've selected Knutson. They were selected through an RFP and elimination process, and they've been very helpful along the way. The owner stakeholders that we've got is the college, Rochester Public Schools, Winona State University, and then obviously the City of Rochester taxpayers are also a stakeholder in this project. We're currently at the design development phase, and we're reviewing those plans kind of as we speak. We'll be returning comments by the end of this month to the architect and engineering team, And the design development submittal also included a guaranteed maximum price from the construction manager at risk. And we are on budget, so that guaranteed maximum price confirms that the project is currently on budget, so we don't foresee any hangups with proceeding. We plan to break ground September 1st, mobilize on site, and then we would plan to be done. The project would be ready for occupancy July of 2016. And so this schedule should pop up here. So where we are today is we're going to be reviewing the plans here in April, getting some comments back. The construction documents and the bidding will happen in May. We plan to, actually,
this is STEM Village.
Okay, so this is the interior remodeling, I apologize. So that's going to be construction documents done in April, construction documents and bidding in May. We'd start construction in June, and we would be substantially complete in July of 2015. So that would be ready for occupancy in August of this year for the fall semester. And the next one is the CPEC schedule. So we plan to do the final review of the construction documents in June of this year. The construction documents will go up for bids in July. We start construction in September. And then we would be about 10 months of construction, be substantially complete in July, and then occupy in August and ready for the fall school year of 2016. I can answer any questions if you have them. Otherwise, I'll step.
Just a real quick question on the building. Is it designed at all to go any higher, or is it single story?
You know, it's designed to be a single story right now with a mechanical mezzanine. So all of the mechanical equipment will be enclosed within the building footprint, so we wouldn't have any exposed mechanical equipment. Beyond that, it isn't planned to, it's not designed for expansion at this time.
Mr. Ruska.
What we did when we talked about location and...
I'm sorry, vertical expansion. That's
right.
Good.
We did keep that in mind that if we want to expand sometime down the road, we know we have two...
We've got a couple options for horizontal or at-grade expansion, so single-story expansion, of about 20,000 square feet. So the site could accommodate building footprint expansions. Mm-hmm. But we're not planning to go vertical.
Mr. Ruska.
Shane, could you go back to that slide that showed the overview of the site?
Yeah.
And show how much that building will penetrate into the parking and then what you're going to do to the parking as far as how you're going to replace that?
Actually, can you go back to here?
One more. Or two more.
One more.
There you go.
So, right here, there are two practice soccer fields to the east, and we've got a separate project, separate from CTEC. We're going to be doing some necessary repairs to the parking lot. There's some reconfiguration that goes along with the CTEC building construction project. And then we'll be expanding the parking into that first set of soccer fields. And we work closely with Park and Rec to make sure that that'll work with their programming. So I think those soccer fields were actually taken off the schedule last fall.
Okay. And I just point out, we appreciate RCTC and the MNSCU allowing the youth to develop these fields, and that it was their land and that someday it could be taken back, and it's happening now, which is fine. I mean, that's the growth and development, but it does, will negatively impact an area that there's no other replacement fields being built, and there's a huge need already for more fields. So it just shows that it's deteriorating into the recreation program here as this develops, so we need to kind of keep that in mind as we look to the big picture moving forward and how that can be replaced and so on. So, just wanted to point out that it will impact and probably hit that area pretty good. So,
yeah, and we definitely appreciate the partnership with Park and Rec. So we're real mindful about expansion like that, but that unfortunately is a necessary evil in that particular site.
I understand. Okay, thank you.
All right. Yep.
Okay, next step. Before I go on to the next step, I do, this has been quite a learning experience for me. I worked for various districts where the district was kind of building things, and we built $7 million last summer on kindergarten classrooms. But this was truly a great partnership with RCTC and Winona State, and I mean, numerous meetings and all the other people we work with. Very happy with the process, and we believe that we're getting a great facility. You know, RCTC allowing us to bring some of the programming into Heinz Center, so we don't have, we have two options, either do that or reduce the number of pathways or really shrink the size of those classes. And we got together and talked about it, and they said they would work with us to do that, and that allowed us to keep all seven pathways by moving some of the programs into the Heinz Center. So the next steps, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we do plan to partner with businesses and community to provide mentorships and apprenticeship experiences with our students. Jeannie was able to go with that group, Dave St. Jim and Kim Norton, and that went to Germany to tour, spend a week and learn more about their apprenticeship program. So that's something I do envision down the road, and I do want our kids to really do some apprenticeships, mentorships, and spend a lot of their time in the field working instead of doing it all just sitting in the classroom. Some other things that we're currently, you probably are read a lot in the paper and heard about the, we're currently discussing our graduation requirements policy. The changes that we're recommending are to give our students more flexibility. We're recommending that 1.5 credits that currently are required be electives, and that gives kids more opportunity and flexibility to take part in one of the pathways that's going on at CTEC when we're running full steam. We have some bills currently in legislation that we're working, the both of us have had the opportunity to go up and testify for these. The first one is to use career technical education dollars. Right now, a teacher has to not only be a certified teacher, but has to have a CTE certification in order for us to use that funding to pay for them. What the bill we have in place is that if we're unable to find a teacher like that, that we can use a community expert to teach the class and use that funding to pay that person. Another one, the Teachers Licensure Act, which allows us, that's what it's talking about, community experts. And then we're looking for supplemental funding. Right now, if you are an EL student or an at-risk student, or if you failed some courses and you need a credit recovery, you can take additional course load and we can get funding up to 1.2 of a student. But just for those situations, the bill that we're trying to get in is that sometimes we have kids that take a full load in our program, but may want to take an online course or a college course. And right now, we don't get additional funding, so we can't pay for that. It comes out of the parent's pocket in order for a student to do that. So we have another bill in it which would allow to use that 1.2 funding for all students who want to take more than a full course load. And then the last slide, we want to, on behalf of Rochester Public Schools, first we want to thank the City Council and the community for renewing the half-cent sales tax. Without that, we wouldn't be here talking to you and being able to provide those opportunities for our students. We want to thank, there's 65 members who businesses have been, not only helped us design the pathways, but as Janie said, they continue to work in subgroups on those different pathways. And then we have 18 hours of meetings. That's much more. That is just this current school year. We didn't even calculate all the hours from the previous year. And then we have a great partnership and collaboration with the City of Rochester, Winona State University, RCTC, Workforce Development Center, and then the Chamber as well. So we want to thank them. And I do believe that's all we have. And we'll take any other questions you may have.
Mr. Ruska.
I have two questions. One is kind of a process question. So you've got students out there that maybe want to get involved in this and aren't sure what it offers. Is there some type of a counseling program or assistance to have somebody sit down and say, okay, where are you at with your education? What do you want to try to do? Here's the different classes. How do you get signed up? How might that process work? That's my first question.
So there's a couple of things. One, new legislation that has been put into effect requires us to have those conversations with all students before they enter ninth grade. So as they exit eighth grade, or by the time they exit eighth grade, we have had the opportunity to sit down with them and say, oh, we see your strengths are here. Where are your interests? This would be good courses for you to take. These are some after-school opportunities. These are some clubs. These are some volunteer types of things that you may want to get involved in. So that plan would be developed for each learner by the time they leave eighth grade. So they would hear about it for sure then. But actually, actually 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, as we get ready to develop that plan, they are getting exposure. So they are getting opportunity to hear and learn about these different career pathways through 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And then this year, for example, our health sciences students came over and visited with the 8th graders and said, these are the types of things that we do at the Health Sciences Career Center and some of those types of things. So we expect to have more of that. We are in the process right now of developing some promotional videos and informational videos to have available to students during registration times, to have available to families, where it will talk to, these videos will talk to students that have been enrolled in the courses, will show the facility once the facility is up and running and able to show, and some of those types of things. So we certainly want to be cognizant of getting the information out and making students aware of it, as well as potential field trips just to come and visit, prior to them having to make the decision if they want to come, because it's easy to talk about, but until you actually see it and experience it.
I guess I'm missing the boat a little bit here. I was kind of looking at maybe some older students that maybe didn't, maybe they got their GEDs, they're not sure what they want to do, mm-hmm. and so they're not sure that this is out there, and maybe they're at RCTC and it isn't their thing. So, this gives a lot of different options, and yet how do they know if it's for them? And I'm not talking about 8th and 7th and 6th grade, I'm talking about...
Yeah, since we were rolling out some of these programs next fall, we've had some parent nights to educate parents. And like I said, we do have students enrolled in the pathways that are opening up next fall already. But we're not done. Beyond the promotional videos, we have to get out in front of kids and educate them. And to be honest, I think we have to educate the parents, because I think some parents have a different view of the type of programming. They may think of the old technical type school, and there is some of that programming there, but there's much more than that that's going to be in the CTEC building. And as I mentioned earlier, I talked about businesses providing mentorships, apprenticeship programs. We want them to come in and talk to kids about their programs, not more than just a one-day career fair where everybody sets up a table and you walk through, but have them coming in on a regular basis and really educate the students on what I do as a welder, what I do as this, and what did I have to do to become that type of career. So we have a long ways to go, and something that I see as probably the biggest challenge for us, because it's unfortunately it's connected to money. In previous years before I got here, we made a lot of reductions in a lot of these current technical classes, especially at the middle school. So they're not getting exposed to it at middle school that would encourage them to want to pursue it when they get into high school. So some way we have to find a way to bring some of that programming back at the middle school level so they can get a little bit of exposure, get an interest, so when they get into high school, they want to pursue it some of the pathways.
But to go specifically to your question about the students that have finished with their GED, we wouldn't have opportunities for those students. These are still kiddos that are trying to obtain credits towards a high school graduation.
Okay.
So we wouldn't. So our students that have graduated with a GED, we continue to encourage them to go visit with RCTC to see what experience.
Okay, good. I think when we look at, we heard from Journey to Growth last week and the huge workforce need that's here. Uh-huh. To me, this is spot on for helping us to develop our local talent and give, these. Everybody has a different talent, a different desire, and to give them additional options like this for training and education allows, I think, really helps us to kind of self-grow our own future workforce. So I really think it's a great program. So thank you.
Mr. Campion, then Mr. Bildebeck.
Maybe building on that, and I don't know if your answer maybe answers this as well. We're hearing a lot about re-careering and kind of looking for ways to support a community that needs to rebalance its workforce. And I think this kind of maybe comes off of Ed's question, or Councilmember Ruska's question. What is this a piece of that portfolio for our community, and how do you see it fitting in with that?
I don't know. You want to come up
great,
and speak to that?
Facility itself, maybe.
To the point of sort of repurposing and getting folks to who maybe missed out in the education pathway, they did a GED or they just didn't complete. We're working hand in hand with the Hawthorne Education Center to do some of that career awareness. So in our partnership with the Hawthorne RPS, the Hawthorne Center, we do pre-academy. So Hawthorne is getting them their GED or doing some of that remedial education that students typically would have come to the college to do. If they pass those classes in Hawthorne, then they come right into RCTC and get into our technical program. So welding, manufacturing, health sciences is a pathway, and there's legislation right now to continue to support that model. So that's definitely an area that's growing, but it probably happened more so in the Heinz Center space versus the CTEC space. But the CTEC space, if we need more capacity in the evenings, we'll be able to use some of that space as well. So there are multiple ways in which we are sort of trying to address the challenges for Journey to Grow.
Well, when we were at the National League of Cities conference in Washington, D.C., one of the things we heard about from the president's address was just the need and the growth and demand for a lot of these more technical jobs, and specifically brought up computer programming. So I'm really excited to see that being a component of kind of what your mix is. And frankly speaking, from kind of as a member of a small business that operates inside the community, I just think that's a fundamental program that will do wonders to kind of improving our access to additional support, additional members of the community who are qualified for the positions we have. So I think that's right on, spot on, looking really great asset for us to leverage.
Mr. Goldberg. I think this program is great. I had the opportunity to serve on the first group of figuring out what they were going to do with the manufacturers and businesses of the city. The question I have is, and this program's in need, not only in Rochester, but other places. If the programs don't fill with the Rochester students, is there a way for surrounding districts and students to take advantage of this?
Yeah, it could very well become a regional career technical center, which could be done two ways. The first way, the other superintendents would probably prefer not this way. They could just open a role in our district. They might not like that. The other option is they can come and take one or two courses. We can charge back the district a tuition fee for however much time that their student spends in our programming. So that is something, and during the growth of that, we've had that conversation that we're not going to turn students away, but we can't afford to let them come for free, because as more students come in, we're going to be required to hire additional staff to accommodate more students. But yeah, there's definitely a way for that to happen.
Is that being discussed?
Yeah, we've been having conversation with that, and I've talked to area superintendents about that. And like I said, they're not real excited about option A, which I wouldn't be either if I was on the other end of that. But you know, option B is definitely a good option for them.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions, Mr. Bilbao?
And one of the things that we talk about, since this is a half-cent sales tax project, is when you put up the sign for your that this is being built there, if they would make sure that it says this is being paid for through the authorization of the half-cent sales tax. I think it's important for the people of Rochester and the community as they come in and spend money in the city of Rochester to see what their dollars are going for. Mm-hmm. And this is a huge project that has great rewards.
Yeah, we can definitely do that. We were actually talking about
that. We'll definitely do that.
Yeah. Perfect. Thank you.
And we will, you know, I think sometime in September we're looking for groundbreaking, and definitely want the city council to be there to be part of that. So once we get a land on the date, we'll let you know about that.
All right, Mr. Wojcik.
Option A is just fine with me too, by the way. I don't recall a whole lot of sympathy from surrounding communities that offered full day kindergarten when we didn't. So, you know, proud to be able to offer our students here in the community great opportunities like this. And if other people want to take advantage of that, welcome to Rochester. One of the things, you know, near and dear to my heart, I'm particularly interested, the students that enrolled here, are they going to see a similar day-to-day schedule like students in the other public schools would see?
It's similar but different. So, for example, the model that we're most familiar with, only because it's been successful for us with health sciences, mm-hmm. is a learner may start their day, let's say, at the comprehensive high school. So maybe I'm a Century student, and I start my day at Century, and I go periods 1 through 5 at Century, and then I come over to Health Sciences Career Center, or in the future it'll be CTEC, for periods 6 and 7. So, or it might be a middle of the day kind of a thing. So what we do is typically it's called a block, a two-period day, or when we get to the point have more of the mentorship, apprenticeship. We might need to get a little more creative with that schedule, but at no point in time, in the near future anyway, will this be the only location that a student would attend high school. I mean, this would be an opportunity for them to come, but they still would be truly a student of their comprehensive high school or their ALC that they attend.
Yeah, and I envision we may have to run buses from all four sites every period.
And now you just hit on exactly where I'm going with this, is that when I see your project team there, I really hope that the our transportation group here in Rochester is part of that as well, because I've never been a fan of the fact that we have to operate simultaneous overlapping transportation systems at twice the cost. And I'm really hoping that we can find a way to pool these resources, be a little bit more efficient with transportation, and I hope that our folks will be part of that process of figuring out how we're going to get kids around too, because my standpoint, I mean, it's very expensive for you to run busing like that, but besides for that, I just think the way we're handling transportation here takes some of these opportunities and makes it more difficult for kids who are in difficult locations or lower-income families that don't have the same mobility capabilities. If we're going to have these opportunities, I want to make sure they're equally accessible for all parties.
It can be done. My former district, we had a great contract with the city bus providers, and we bused a big portion of our secondary students on city buses, and then we had a deal with them where employees or students could use buses 7 days a week. As long as they showed their student ID, they could ride a bus on the weekends for free as well.
Yeah. A lot of communities are doing that now.
Good. Mr. Bilbeck? Yeah, I just have to make one last comment. If our former council member Nowicki, if he was here, he would finish this by saying this is another great project in the 4th Ward. So I want to make sure.
Sure you would. It's hard to bend your arm.
No, not at all.
Is that all he'd say?
Well, that's all I'm going to say.
Okay, Ms. Means.
I just want to thank you so much for this initiative. I do have because it's so needed. We've known that because we did have just an update, and plus our president even serves on the J2 Journey to Growth board, and so it's great to see some of these spaces being filled in by these other career options that are being made available through your course pathways. The question I have is the 8th graders, have you started it yet? Have you started those surveys to understand where their interests are and how?
This was the first year that we were required to do it. So, yes, but we've got a long ways to go to get to the level that we need to be. So, yes, we've started some of that conversation and started those personalized learning plan developments, yes.
And when you make the determination based on your survey, where their strengths are in 8th grade, in 10th grade, how do you address those if they switch from...
Right, absolutely. Well, what they do, and really they're kind of self-identified, so they might say, well, I feel really good in math, or I think I really do well in science, or whatever. But then each year, as they're a high school student, at least one time throughout the course of each year, we will have that follow-up conversation with the student and the parent and say, oh, I noticed when we did the original plan, you kind of thought you were interested in something working outside or whatever. Is that kind of still where you're at, or are you, and really kind of keep them going? Because we do know, I mean, my goodness, it's hard to decide what you want to be when you're 18, let alone when you're 13. So, I mean, of course you're
37.
Going to. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was going to go there, but it is, I mean, it does take some time. So we just, and that's why I think the exposure is so important. We just really need to give them the opportunity to see what exists, because we have found that if their mom or their dad or their close personal friend or neighbor doesn't do it, they don't know that it exists in the world. And so we have to do a lot more exposure on our end. But the best way to do that, we can talk till we're blue in the face. We can show them YouTube videos, and that will get us so far. But really coming out to the sites and experiencing what people do on a day-to-day basis, that's really what registers with them. Now, I know it's extremely, intimidating to have 30, 12-year-olds come out to a workplace. I get that, but it really is for the better of our city in the long run. So the more we can partner on some of those things, the better we will be.
I know that,
go ahead.
Pardon me, that we have great counselors in the public schools. Mm-hmm. and their workload is already quite significant. Are you planning then to hire more counselors to do the surveys and follow up and the coaching that's so needed for some of the students that don't have the background because of parents or neighbors or so forth?
A couple of things on that. We recognize completely that the counselors can't do it on their own. There's just no way. And so our teachers will play an active role in that. The survey that we just spoke of, that actually is a part of the Explore and the Plan test that they already do. So that's not anything above and beyond. It's something that they already do. How we use that information will be used differently now. So, but we really do need to get our teachers in place to help with that. There is also legislation right now that would put some additional staff into our buildings that would work as the liaison between the education and the business or the community entity to develop some of those partnerships as well. So if that were to go through, that would just be a tremendous gift for us. But in the meantime, we'll just continue to speak with groups such as yours and others just to kind of make people aware that this opportunity exists. But
if you find that there is low representation in the underutilized groups, what plans do you have to reach those students or those parents?
We currently have a couple of things. One, we have actually a member of my team that works very closely with some of our traditionally underrepresented populations, and she works closely with them through a program called SAFE. And actually, they just got done having a job fair last week over at Mayo High School that was very successful to really expose them early and often. So through the SAFE program, which is Students and Family Engagement, she works closely. We've got SAFE teams at each of our high schools and some of our middle-level programs, and they begin their college exploratories very early. So they do visits to college. They do visits to trade union types of training facilities. They really talk about communication. They talk about building a resume. They just do some of those types of things, as well as some of the academic pieces, because we don't want to lose a learner. You know, we don't want them to fall off because they fail a course or something. So they support academically, but then they also start connecting the academics to the career and college readiness that they need. And so we do have a person in place with the district right now as part of my team, actually, that works very closely. Now, granted, probably works with 200 students around all of Rochester Public Schools. So are we hitting everybody to the, not hitting, that's probably not the right word, but are we making the right connections with every single student? Not yet, but we're certainly aware of it and continuing to look at how we can.
Yeah, this is a great program. I so appreciate hearing about it. And this may help to shrink the achievement gap as well if you can target some special areas that are interesting to the students. And by the way, filling the needs that we're going to need in our community in the future.
Yeah, I agree with you, Sandra. I believe, is it going to fix it altogether? No, but I think we're not engaging some students because we don't have the programming to engage them. I'm hoping this different seven pathways will help us engage that small percentage that for some reason we're not connecting with them, and this may be other ways to connect with them.
And I think you touched on a key word earlier when you said partnership. I don't see this as something that's just on the education or school system. We're really talking about the community, the future of our community. So we're all involved in this, and I think touching on something that Councilmember Ruska said, we've got to figure out ways to do that community outreach. The students that are already out of high school, but maybe they're in their 20s or even their 30s, you know, and they're looking to re-career or looking for those opportunities. So we've got to do that, and in some cases we do it in a very creative way. I know the public library, they're doing things like just having a 3D printer in the library just to expose students to just that little piece of technology and maybe strike a spark with someone. So I really see this as a community effort, not so. Hopefully you understand that we're all there supporting you.
Well, I'm glad you said that, Randy, because my closing comments were going to be, you know,
no more money.
No more money.
Well played.
You know, I was at the Journey to Growth thing, and they, you know, CTEC was talking, and I really believe this is going to get at some of the issues we have here as a community, the skills gap. But we can't do it by ourselves. even with the great partnerships we have with the colleges, that's not going to be enough. To really get this running like it needs to and really have the impact that some people are hoping that it has, we're going to need the city, we're going to need the business, we're going to need everybody to step up and help us make this be successful. But I think it's unique. When I'm out talking, not only in the state of Minnesota, but other states, talking about how we develop these pathways, they're blown away that we actually sat down with businesses and providing programs that meet the needs of our businesses. And it's exciting, and I said this to the chamber as well, they're not done. We still have a lot of work to do together, but I think if we all work together, we're going to have a really unique thing here in our area. So thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. With that, thank you for your presentation. We'll look for updates as we progress. All right. Next up, we have a discussion of fire station number 2, possible reuse, and some information that was provided to us by the park department. Ms. Whitman, you want to step us through this?
Yes, thank you. Okay, thank you. And today I'd like to report back on a discussion we had during the February 18th Committee of the Whole meeting. We reviewed in that meeting the disposition of fire station number 2, which will be vacated in the next several weeks by the fire department. In that meeting, and in a memo that followed, Terry Adkins, our city attorney, clarified the options for management control of the facility. And there are 3 options, one of which would be the park board requesting removal of the facility. The second would be transfer of possession of the building to the park board. And the third is a new permit would be issued by the park board for the building to remain in its current location, but in a different use. And we presented these options and had a larger discussion about the fire station in our last park board meeting. And as a result, the board directed me to request the second option, and that is that possession of the facility be directed to the park board. Now, I'd just like to point out, when I was here before in February, I discussed the maintenance as being our primary focus for that facility. And just again, I think it's worth pointing out that we've outgrown our facility on East Center Street, and that being because maintenance needs have grown gradually and sometimes not so gradually over the past few years. And we will need to look to expand in some fashion. But the feedback I received from council was to look at other options for our maintenance needs. And we did look at the city-owned facility on 37th Street. We found that facility is not in the best of health. There's some concerns about the doors that are not large enough for some of our equipment. And on top of all that, the building is in use by the water reclamation plant, and it will be for the next 18 months. So that's where that stands. Now, since using the fire station to expand our maintenance activities would be only temporary, that would only provide a temporary option, we feel that we need to focus our efforts to look long-term for those needs. And that leads me to the memo that I provided. We have taken the feedback from council. We some of the ideas were discussed was to offer public programs and to look at that potential. And many of the groups that have requested use of the facility would be offering sports program. And the Parks and Recreation Department has a long history of seeking out similar partnerships, vetting those partnerships and managing them, and we feel it's in the best interest of the city for the board and staff to continue to have oversight over the programs and facilities that are in place. We have some new and promising partnerships that I mentioned in the memo, and those are aimed at improving the health of members of our community. One of those is Healthy Living Rochester. This is an initiative, a health initiative supported by Mayo Clinic. Dr. Randy Thomas leads that effort. He was here earlier, but he is working with patients today, so we had to leave. This summer, we're going to be launching some summer youth activities in a partnership with community education. And those will be aimed at introducing camp participants to our parks and trails and all the benefits of parks and recreation. And we are also working with Olmsted County Public Health on a number of grant-funded programs. And Kelly Corbin is here today. One of the programs we're working with her on is focused on promoting bicycle commuting in Rochester. And the fire station would be a perfect location to expand on those initiatives. If between Dr. Thomas and Kelly, we discussed some ideas and we could easily have the building scheduled in a matter of time. And all of these are partnership programs that strengthen our mission. And just wanted to point out the advantages of our request is that the additional program space that would be gained would be of minimal cost to taxpayers. Along those lines, Parks and Recreation could maintain the building with minimal additional funding. The board and staff agree that long-term plans for the park could change. And with that in mind, we feel it makes sense for all the city-owned facilities in parks to be under control of the board. And we realize that the council members, some of our board members and staff, we've all been approached by groups or individuals that have their eye on using that facility. We again feel that the board is uniquely qualified to direct the programming, the partnerships, to guide staff in the activities that will support the mission of the Parks and Recreation Department. And it being in Silver Lake Park, it makes sense to move in this direction. And we request your support in doing this and appreciate the opportunity to provide the feedback.
Questions, comments, Ms. Means?
I just took a couple of notes regarding the change of use. It was in reference to Mr. Johnson's note to us that if it is a change of new use, it needs to be brought up to meet the current codes for the new use, including accessibility, you know, laws and restrooms and those kind of things. So that would have to occur, and you know that part, right?
Yes, I included that in an email memo that I sent, and that would be for any repurposing of the building. That review would have to take place.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Wojcik?
So when we last talked, I mean, I thought the, you know, the principal purpose for this building was storage for some of the equipment, particularly equipment that we wouldn't want out in the harsh winters. But are you seeing that there's an opportunity for multiple public purposes then with the site? Or, you know, if you were to guess today what you would end up doing with it, what would look like there?
Okay, backing up to the use, it wouldn't be just storage, but workspace and a variety of activities to support maintenance. But with feedback at council on the discussion we had on the desire to open it up to public use, we see it being programmed much like any of our other facilities in partnership with other groups that conduct activities, and that would come through the department for review. Many of the programs could be a rented space. It could be programs in partnership with the department, such as our youth sports and other sports activities that we do on our sports fields.
Mr. Bilbeck.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you've re-looked at how you would use it. I think that's important. My question is, what kind of procedure would you go forth to these different groups that have made comments that they would like to use that facility? Are you going to reach out to those groups? We've heard from the boxing club. We've heard some from the wrestling clubs, as well as some of the things that you've heard before we, as a council, have. I'm just curious, what would be your process?
First of all, just the groups we know of, we want to hear from, we've heard from some of them. I'm sure we need to get your feedback on the specific requests you've received. But I believe there need to be a vetting process for that. We want the use to align with our mission if it's going to be a park and recreation facility. We want to make sure that they meet all the requirements that the current partners do, insurance, and having the certification in some cases to do the coaching and work with you. We have that process now, and we use a very similar process for use of the indoor space.
Anyone else? Mr. Russell.
I guess, Paul, I certainly would like to, want to support what you're requesting here, and as well as the park board. You know, they've taken time to look at this. Seems like it wasn't too long ago we heard from Mr. Nigber about how staff is really thin and unable to kind of handle all the things that they have, and now we're looking at taking on another building. I guess I'm kind of curious. Part of me wants to know kind of what other options might be out there. But how does this hit the department as far as, if you're taking on another building and programming and everything else, how does that fit within your ability to handle extra responsibilities?
Yeah, I know it won't be a no-cost venture. We would need to take a look at what the utility costs and maintenance costs would be, and we would need to request those funds in the next budget cycle. I think the advantage is it's a turnkey operation. We're not looking at building a site or taking on a project. It's a facility that's in the parks and available for use. But yes, I understand as far as we are spread pretty thin, but we think by possibly some contracted services for the upkeep of the building and minimal costs along those lines, we'd be able to take it on.
So have you done projections on what the cost could be? What the city could be hit here with additional costs?
I believe we've got, do we have the utility costs yet for that?
There's utility costs that finance has that it'll get annually, but I've not seen those yet. As far as other maintenance goes, it's really going to boil down to the improvements that are necessary related to ADA accessibility, and the repurposing of the building based on building code requirements.
Well, and the programming, I know that that's additional, that's going to take additional manpower too, and I haven't been hearing about it from a lot of people that say we need to have additional programming out there to do this. It's good if it's, things that tie into a healthier community and more things to do, but I haven't heard a lot of requests for it, so.
Well, some of the programs I highlighted are those that we're seeking grants for, Kelly has done a great job in promoting cycling in the community, and that's an area of focus. We felt it would be an ideal location to house those activities, have a home base for those. Along similar lines, those that we're working with Dr. Thomas on, those are grant funded, so it'll be an advantage that we wouldn't be requesting additional funds for those type of programs, and there would be room for others as well.
Mr. Woodrick, do you have a comment?
I was just curious. My understanding is even if we have the Parks Board take it internally, it's still a change of use, and I'm wondering how much cost would be associated with what we might have to do to bring the building up to a usable code, or maybe we don't need to do anything.
You would.
Bendel, you actually use the building? If it's just used for storage of the vehicles, we'd probably call that the same as what it was before with regard to the vehicle base, but I'm not sure there's talk about using the basement.
No, but if there's public programming involved, I assume it has to meet assembly requirements?
Probably.
Yeah.
The type of program.
Any idea how much that'll...
No idea.
Okay. More than we have cumulatively cash in our wallets sitting here?
How much money you
have? Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Mike's got some.
Just a comment for Michael. We had spoken to both Randy and the fire marshal, Van Swisher, about this very topic, and they suggested we go outside and hire an architect or consultant to do that analysis. Again, based on a park board property, it's like, when do you make that investment? Right now, it's not that opportune time. The fire department moves out, that would be the wise choice, I would think.
And my other question, too, and some other, you know, Minneapolis does this pretty well. The location of the building is absolutely fantastic. And have we considered anything like a potential private partnership as a revenue generator for the Parks Department, you know, be it a restaurant or something like that?
We've not looked at that option. We've strictly looked at public programming.
Okay.
Along, you know, focusing on our mission, provide recreation activities and facilities for the community.
Although the site itself, and because there's no parking there, they can have park space, part of the parking lot. Mm-hmm. It'd be a challenge to operate that in its current location without additional parking.
Okay.
And then one point I wanted to make along with programming, one of the building groups currently is using the facility for storage and has been along with the fire department. So there's some current use that we would continue.
Oh, okay.
With this proposal.
Mr. Ruska, then Ms. Meads.
Just wondering, as we talk about improvements and costs and so on, if I remember, isn't there a park reserve fund out there somewhere? Has some money in it? Would that be applied to this at all?
We have a reserve amount that we have in the park fund, a general fund, and basically that is to cover cash flow purposes, and that fund is not viewed as completely sufficient yet, so we would not want to really touch that if we don't have to.
So then it would come out of the improvements to this would come out of
well,
it
probably
have to
be budgeted fund. Through the CIP, capital improvement program. Mm.
Which is the mayor and council's determination. All right. Ms. Means, then Mr. Campion.
I guess this is to Mr. City Attorney, if you'd like to expand upon this a little bit. It was your letter that was in our package, and one of the things you said is once this ceases to operate as a fire station, the building must be removed unless the park board grants new permit allowing it to remain. Now, is this something that is yet outstanding, that this permit allowing it to remain needs to be obtained first? Let me see. Do you want me to tell you?
No, I remember my memo. What I'm trying to tell you there is that the permit granted by the park board allows a fire station to be at this location, mm-hmm. period. Mm-hmm. If you want to put something else there, a museum, some sort of facility for the Public Works Department, you will need to obtain a new permit from the Park Board. And they determine whether or not they will give you that permit.
Thanks.
Absent that permit, it would sit idle because we couldn't use it for anything else.
Right.
But if we give it to the Park Board, then the Park Board is going to decide who gets the permit to use it. They're going to have the final say in that, right?
If you deliver possession of the building to the Park Board, it's their building now. And they can determine how it's going to be used.
Could we let the Park Board have the permit for using it? Or is that up to them to decide?
I'm sorry?
If we still own the building, could the Park Board be just given the permit to use the building for the usage they want, and we still retain ownership of the building? Or do we have to give the ownership of the building to the Park Board?
You could grant a license to the Park Board to use it, and you retain ownership of it. If the Park Board is willing to allow that building to remain in that type of a situation.
Mr. Campion?
Does this happen to us often where public buildings...
This is what you call what happens when you have three semi-autonomous boards existing along with the mayor and council. And under our Home Rule Charter, these three boards have some very autonomous types of powers. And here's one example.
But we're in agreement that without our agreement, there would be no way for them to reuse this property, right?
Say that again?
Unless we fund an update via the accounting, or they can find it internally, they couldn't take use of this property because they wouldn't be able to refit it from being a fire station.
In terms of expenditures?
In terms of, they legally cannot maintain this building as a fire station, as a park board, correct?
Correct.
So they can't take possession of it without declaring a new use for the building.
Right. They would have to, through the council,
determine what use they're going to put to it, and then there may be ramifications from the building code.
And they would be obligated to pay for whatever ramifications.
They would have to pay out of the budget that you folks approve.
And thus, we can find that, I mean, approval for this comes from us in terms of financial.
Financially, ability. Yes.
Okay. I mean, ultimately, it's a bit frustrating because I can definitely respect the Parks Department's perspective on this, that it addresses a future need of the Parks Department. At the same time, it sounded like I even heard that this wasn't the optimal facility for future development of the Parks Department. That there will still be need to revisit the kind of growth of the Parks Department in the future. And I kind of, you know, I don't know, I don't want to get too hung up on a one-off case. This seems like something I'd be just as happy not dealing with over and over again, but it does kind of put us in an awkward position because the note that suggests, you know, they kind of, it was a little bit more forceful language than maybe I thought was necessary, but they wanted possession back. And, I mean, ultimately, what I see is, you know, we're beholden to the taxpayers of Rochester to figure out the best use of this property, and that isn't always as a shed. And, you know, I think there's other uses, and I've heard you kind of bridge the gap between this is just a shed for machinery to other uses that can take place in this building.
It wasn't going to be a shed for machinery.
You're right. I'm.
And we reviewed all the variety of needs of the department, and maintenance is still high on the list. But the feedback we received from council, there was a desire to have it for public use, and that's the proposal you have in front of you.
Yeah, ultimately, like, it's hard for me to even weigh this against, you know, other city departments that might have needs for that building. You know, just because it sits on parkland, we've kind of given priority to the park department here. And I think that, you know, this is just it's a wash issue for me. I can't, your presentation is fine. I think financially it's sound. I just have a hard time navigating this.
I think to that point, I'm not aware of anybody else within the city that's requested use of the building besides the park board. And you're right. I think one thing that is encouraging since the conversation in February is that we were looking more for public uses. Now, if we can do a shared arrangement and you're able to use it for some maintenance facilities, but public purpose was kind of fundamental, at least in my thinking. Mr. Wojcik?
Two of the things that make this a more difficult decision for me, again, is the lack of comprehensive master plans pertaining to this, and also the lack of real centralized facilities management within the city, similar to the way that the county would do it, and those are items that would certainly help with this. But I do point out, we keep bringing up the park board, and I actually believe that our park board people live in this community, too, and care about this community, yes, too, and we're competent enough to be on a board. And you know, so I think that they are aware of the concerns and the interests of other boards, and I would, in this particular case, it is in fact a part of the Rochester's park system. So I would defer greatly to what those individuals on that board thought was the best for that property, and be very, very hesitant to overrule them.
Just one caveat for me, someone who knows the building, since it's a fire station, is it wired with like the fiber and stuff for the city infrastructure, do we know?
It is. We would gain at least that. It does have the we're on the city's backbone on that. As far as communication.
So is there a plan? I mean, not that I don't think everyone can use additional broadband, but is there kind of a plan of what the use of that facility would be? I'm assuming that communications would become a big cost here.
Yeah, you mean in relative to internet and
just what, I mean, I'm assuming we paid a lot to have the building wired for all sorts of advanced communication for the fire station. Just wondering if there's a plan or if that's is that a way?
One of the options that came up from our Dr. Thomas is there are many kind of online resources and programming he had in mind that it would be grant funded to bring to that facility.
Okay.
And I suppose there, as far as program space, our staff, if they, would be able to use that as a satellite office space and coordinate activities, that would be a plus. You mentioned the board, and I should have mentioned this at the beginning. Larry Mortensen from our park board joined us today, so I just wanted to point that out and introduce him to others that may not be aware that he is on our board.
Mr. Bilderback.
I like what I hear. I like the fact that you're going out. I'd like to be kept updated on that, as well as what the expenses for upgrading the facility would be. I think it'd be interesting. I'm interested in how you're going to go out and facilitate, and how the grant opportunity goes, and as well as possibly others who may wish to come in and rent a small piece of that property. I think it's great to see it used as something for the community. So I'm very pleased with that, Paul. And now my next comment isn't for you or the park board, but it is for administration. I'm a little disappointed to hear that. It seems like when we have open buildings, whoever comes in and squats first gets it. I knew nothing about the fact that water was in that building or had set up shop there. It again goes back to my question that I'd asked when we had this discussion initially. Our buildings that we have that are empty, who's in them, why are they there?
What building you're talking about?
37th Street.
That was purchased by the sewer utility for eventual usage of the expansion, so it would make some sense that the water reclamation plan was utilized.
But it didn't seem like anybody knew that when we had this conversation initially. And so my question is, again, what buildings do we have and who's in them? I think would be good for this council to know.
Yeah, that's why I just sent you that. I just sent a report of the buildings that we do have. And there aren't very many.
That just came this afternoon, so you might not have seen it yet.
It's always work.
What's your excuse?
9 p.m.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll just add that despite my line of questioning, I think I'm on board with this. I think it makes sense to defer to the Parks Board in this case to see what their prerogative is on this piece of property. But as Councilmember Bilderback said, I think looking at some of the price tags here is going to be real important as we roll around to the budget process for next year. And I would say, my support is contingent on something being reasonable in that regard.
Just a question for the council. I realize we're talking about recreational and public use of the facility, but throwing the boundaries open a little wider, we know that there's a theater group, for example, that's in a pinch looking for some practice space. Are we willing to entertain a broader spectrum of public use if it works in the building? Mm-hmm. And that's the one that comes to mind as I read the press recently. But I don't know if that's too much, Mr. Ruska.
Well, I guess I think if we're going to move forward with this, it's up to the park board to decide what's the best use. Nick mentioned earlier about a storage shed. I hope if these grants fall through, it doesn't turn into a storage shed, because I think it could. We've got a beautiful piece of property along the river there by the ballpark that's kind of turned into a storage shed in a lot of ways. And I know that there's a need out there, and I agree with what Michael says about maybe a better plan to come up with some way to address this instead of taking old buildings and then just kind of trying to throw our stuff in there, to have a better plan on how to meet the needs of the park department over the end of the future is probably makes a lot more sense than to try to take these leftover buildings and try to modify them into getting by. That area by the ball field there is right along the river with the sky, downtown skyline in the background, and we've got park department in there with a bunch of shredders and things like that. So I guess I think that bigger plans might be better here over the time. But if the park board is going to take this over, I hope they come up with some good plans, and I'll trust that they'll. I know Mort and the gang are good community people, and do everything they can to make that happen. So.
And I think part of the reason I brought up that specific example of the theater group is any of our public facilities, like the Chateau, this came up. We want to make sure that the facilities are used, extensively for public purpose. Not think in terms of 8 to 5 or something like that. Mm-hmm. We want these buildings to be really fully utilized. So I would just encourage keep the options open, Mr. Bogan.
I would be willing to let the park board go ahead and figure out their criteria and let them make that determination whether they could facilitate a theater group or not again, it's community activity. I would like to see some of these grants go. That would make their life a lot easier to be able to get some of that funding in there. But I would leave it up to the park board to make those decisions.
Mr. Atkins, a technical question. If council goes down that path of wanting to convey the structure, is that a simple RCA? What
you're the word convey throws me. Are you willing to depart or to dispose of it entirely, or just to allow the park board to have temporary use and let them decide how they want to use it?
You're talking about Mr. Ruska's question. Let's take the first scenario. If we were willing to convey it outright, as is requested by the park board. Is that just a simple RCA to make that action happen?
Yes, and we would check to see whether or not there would actually be a conveyance in the typical legal sense. It may not be. At a minimum, some resolution will be required to memorialize what you've done.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, if we take the second scenario,
same thing. Same answer.
Okay.
I guess, could we ask Mr. Woodman what he thinks about that option?
Well, I think it would be... When you know, a lot of the things came up in this discussion, and we're in the last discussion. One is a park-wide master plan. If we're looking at future long-term use of the building, it would make sense for the park department, park board, to have complete control of the building. So if the change of that area of the park is redesigned in the master plan process, we can move forward on that plan. That would be my opinion. I can't speak for the board, but I kind of feel they would agree with that. Just based on some of the feedback we received about just the maintaining flexibility to respond to change and long-term planning in the park.
Mr. Bilbeck. Mr. Atkins, could we make it so that we give it to the park board, but if they choose to move out, the park department moves out, it returns back to the city?
Yes, and that would be along the lines of Councilmember Ruska's suggestion of keeping the non-park or city portion alive should it never be used as a park facility.
Essentially, a reciprocal of the agreement we have now.
Right.
If we would convey the building, and if it's no longer used for park and recreation uses, it reverts back to the city.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How about that?
Can revert back to the city for a use other than a fire station, though? So if it reverts back to the city, it's just for a fire station to be limited, right?
I'm sorry, I'm not following.
Well, there's a permit for a fire station.
To put it on parkland.
Right.
And once it's no longer a fire station, that permit doesn't allow it to be there.
Right.
So what would happen is that the city would tell the park board, you can have it, the building, and once it's no longer used, if it's ever no longer used for park board-related activity, the city will then get it back again, because the city may then apply for a permit for some other use.
But then they have to ask the park for whatever permit they have.
Right.
Right. Mr. Campion.
Ultimately, what option, if the park department stopped using the building, would they have besides reverting it to the city? Are they legally able to sell property? So ultimately, this is kind of a good point.
They can demolish property.
Can they demolish the building?
Terry, on the memo, you talked about removal of the building. Would that be under the direction of the park board?
Well, this is getting a difficult situation because we almost have an adversarial relationship at that point. The park board might request the council then to please remove your fire station building since it's no longer a fire station and the permit doesn't apply.
The reason I ask, is, you know, in long-term use of the park, if it was a plan to, you know, revitalize, you know, redesign that corner. That's what I'm talking about. You know, would that hinder the park board opportunity to do that at a future date?
If the building remains, and you would ask.
Well, I guess answer to the original question is I'm trying to make that process feasible for the park board if in the future. You know, I guess I'm looking back to 1953 when this permit was made. I wish somebody was there to say, hey, what happens 20 years from now or 50 years from now? But I'm just trying to, I guess if you're asking me, I would want the park board to remain flexible to respond to those changes.
Yeah, ultimately,
that may come up.
Ultimately, we're going to work together. Mm-hmm. This is this isn't an adversarial relationship, so I don't even see
it. I wasn't trying to institute option one, remove the building or hang that over.
If you were, this might become an adversarial relationship, but it doesn't have to be.
How do we respond to future changes without getting hung up?
Mr. Hickey.
So I think what you're saying, if I understand, is if you accept it, if we turn it over for park board use now, you have programming or whatever in there, and then according to the master plan now, 10 years from now, you decide to level it and make it green space. Is that the option the park board has? I mean, I think that's the question. How does that work?
It gives them more flexibility than if we have a modeled ownership relationship.
Plus, we're going to be funding any sort of change like that is going to be coming to us for funding, so I would plan that we would have a say in. I support just getting it.
Well, in my opinion, I think we've conveyed that we certainly want the building used for the highest and best use, public purpose as best possible. Certainly, we understand and appreciate some of the needs of the park department itself. And knowing that, and I trust that the park board will do the right thing and go forth in good spirit, or in the spirit of what we're talking about. So my opinion would be to go ahead and convey it and go from there.
We used to convey, deliver the building to the park board?
Yes.
Okay. What I'd like to see is what happens next, some bullet points to say, you got the permit or you're working with the city attorney on whatever legal things need to be done. I guess I think it's fine, and I support the park board, but for me, I'd like to see the next steps. What will you do? What have you done? Have you pursued grants or, just some update on that type of the status.
Well, the next hurdle will be getting it repurposed, and we can report back on that. And I can go back to some of our partners and get a more full, robust schedule of options. I just, in the discussion we've had, I can see a variety of uses. I'm open to the arts programming as well as a variety of others, and I have that background of programming, and I think it's an exciting opportunity for probably all of us.
Again, that was just my opinion, just to keep the discussion moving.
I agree.
I'm looking for heads to give the city attorney and other staff direction.
There's one question I have.
Go ahead.
Just kind of curious. When we give, there's no money exchanged between the park. So you just give the building. They don't owe us any money?
No.
Okay, that's good.
Okay.
You have considerable leverage over the park board.
Yes.
Because you control their budget.
No budget.
Yeah.
All right.
We have money.
So that's the direction for the city attorney to develop an appropriate request for a resolution?
Okay, we'll do.
Okay.
And we'll take it up then.
And then you'll give us kind of an update of the permit and all of those other things.
Repurposing, and then we'll kind of hold off and with scheduling until we get that done, but I can provide you with some of the feedback, and I'll be requesting those groups that have contacted council. Definitely the next step will be to see what we need to do to repurpose the building and bring it to standards.
Yeah. Update is an interesting way to describe asking for money.
Yeah. Mr. Quenvold, refresh my memory. When is that building due to be vacated? When does the new fire station actually open? Do we have a date?
I don't remember the date. I think it's June.
April.
I think it's June.
But they talked about being the new one by April.
Yeah.
End of April.
They're talking about being out by the end of this month.
They might be that day.
Right. There might still be some transition.
Yeah. I'll find out the date and send it to you.
Okay. Moving on, we're getting tight on time here, and I think, Mr. Quenvold, you wanted to bring up something on the Verizon?
Yes, I'd just like Aaron to just briefly.
Do we defer the financial review till next time, or what would
I think that would be about that? What would you, Dale?
Sure.
So Aaron, you want to come just give a brief overview?
Yeah.
The Verizon small cell.
Right. Hopefully everyone saw the big demo this afternoon.
Yes.
Yeah.
So most of that memo comes from RPU. It was a nice cut and paste, so I take no credit for pretty much 99% of it. But I mean, basically, I think it does just detail the concerns that were raised by RPU and city staff related to the proposal for the small cells. As noted at the end, also brought up by RPU that there are other options out there, and we've actually seen those other options come out with other carriers who have worked out deals with some of the downtown property owners to place antennas. So I think in general at this point the staff recommendation is to not move forward with their proposal and just kind of see where they go from there. I'm sure they may come back with something else, or they may make some other proposal on what they want to do. And I think one of the options that was discussed is that they could try and place their own pole in the right-of-way. And we could run into that issue, as well, if that is what comes up. But we just don't know for sure yet what they would want to do if we said no.
Just out of curiosity, is this similar at all to what we're facing with our broadband carrier, that FCC rules almost force us to comply with requests, or do we have some discretion here?
They're approaching you as the landlord in this situation, as the owner of the poles. That's not the situation that you're referring to where there's a 60-day shot clock, for example, and you have to have written findings and so forth and so on. Those apply if somebody is seeking to install a freestanding cell phone tower and you're acting in a regulatory capacity as opposed to the owner of the property upon which the property is being attached.
Okay.
Apparently you folks went to a seminar. This was discussed, the FCC, and it's very, very stringent requirements that we're going to follow.
We heard a lot about it at NLC.
Those don't apply here.
Yeah. I guess what I was, to be more blunt, I'm trying to make sure that if we say no, can they do it anyway, kind of thing.
They can do it anyway. They can find Plan B, private property, if they can install
it. But not public, without our permission.
But not on public property, without the permission of the owner of the public property.
That's all I was curious about. So the recommendation is to deny the request for the criteria that are set forth in the memo. Are questions or comments on that? Mr. Campion?
The last time they were here, the numbers they were suggesting didn't really present a huge opportunity for the city in terms of revenue. So, I mean, if the city staff is against it, I didn't feel particularly persuaded by the financial argument.
Well, I think about what I caught in that memo a little bit is, these poles that we put up aren't exactly marvels of modern engineering. I'm just curious what these little towers they want to put on there. I mean, how much are we talking about in terms of loading or wind loading? I mean, are they substantial, or are these just little boxes that sit up there? I mean, how significant are we talking? I don't know if RPU staff has any information on what exactly they're talking about.
Sydney or Mark, do you want to address that?
Yeah, they're similar to a 5-gallon pail size. It's a canister that mounts on a pole. You're right. Every one of those poles that they'd want to go on, we'd have to have an engineer certify that they can handle the wind loads. These poles aren't designed for attachments from the beginning, so.
Okay. I don't see a downside for us in turning this down.
Mr. Bildebeck.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see an issue. I think the points that were made by staff are appropriate. The only thing that would persuade me to want to maybe move forward if they made them in the shape of birds of prey. No problem.
And paid us 10 times as much.
Otherwise, I didn't see that in there, so I think that what staff has recommended is reasonable.
All right. Any other questions, comments on that?
Mm. So we won't have an RCA in that. We'll just take that your consensus that the indicator is denied. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. My apologies, Dale. We'll get you up next time. First thing.
Looks up,
Mr. Atkins.
Just to confirm.
1,100 accounts. I'm ready for number one if you're going to get started.
Just to confirm, the leash law public hearing that was going to be held on April the 20th will not, because the Park Board tabled discussion until their May 5th meeting, I believe it is. Right. And as such, I assume it's the council's wish now to have that hearing on May the 18th instead.
Yeah. And I caught that, and I hope they caught that, too.
All right. Anything else this afternoon?
A couple of quick ones. One, a little request for some information. Two things I'd like to have staff
it can be at a committee meeting or just through a memo, but I'd like updates on. One is, I'm curious where we are in terms of trying to get access through the 318 Commons building to the potential development site on the corner. My understanding is we didn't preserve that access, and I bring this up because I suspect the parties involved with needing to grant that access are going to come back and ask us to allow the Skyway to cross the alley to a future building of theirs, and I think we should maybe clarify up front if we expect them to be partners in this or not. But if we could get any updates on that.
I can actually give you a little bit, Mike, because I've talked to the party that doesn't want to go through the 318 because of contractual issues that they've done with UMR, as well as their financing for the building. They had no problem going across the alley and down the other side of the alley to that other facility. They're willing to do that, but it doesn't sound like anybody's gone far as far as writing up any agreement, or the two parties haven't met to have that conversation. Because there'd also be a third party who has some property on the other side of the alley as well. So.
Well, and I, like I say, any update that we could get would be appreciated. Second thing I'd like an update on is...
What, first off, who would that update come from? Who are you?
I can send you a little update on that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Just so we know who's tagging
up. I'll send you an email. All
right.
Thank you, Terry.
Second, I am. This one's kind of bothered me for a while, but apparently there are some energy issues with fire station number 3, which is the one out on 2nd Street, and it's actually performed significantly worse than its peers that were built around the same time. And I'd like to better understand what the issue is out there, and this would be maybe in the form of a memo, but what's going on with this one? Why is it performing so much worse than the others? And I know Greg's alluded to there's some issue out there, but I don't know what that is and what it would take to address that issue. And finally, and this one I would actually like to, and I don't see this on there, but I'd like to, sometime in the future, I'd like to have at the Committee of the Whole meeting, I'd like to have Helen from the county come in and talk to us about how they do their facilities management in the county, because I've learned a little bit about it, and I think it's absolutely fantastic the way they've centralized some of those functions and the way they're really analyzing energy data and performance data in their buildings and improving the performance. So with the council's consent, I'd like to add that at some point to our upcoming agendas, and I haven't asked Helen if she'd come, but I suspect that she will.
One of the things I'm finding as I try to manage the calendar along with Mr. Funbold, we have far more topics than we have weeks in the year. One of the things we might want to do at some point is talk about another city-county combined meeting or retreat or something like that, where we can, and that might be an excellent topic for that sort of discussion.
We can just throw it on there as a placeholder and handle it that way. That's
happy
fine.
Happy to do that.
So.
Mr. Hickey?
I had a question on the energy response. Is that just something the fire department sends a memo? Is that the level?
Sure.
The energy issues with the fire station?
Yeah, I go to the system. It's called RADSIT B3 Benchmarking.
Right.
And it shows...
But you're saying you want a response. So is this just like a memo from the fire department? Obviously, we're not going to do a study.
No, we got to figure out what the issue is out there, because it's we're bleeding energy in that building relative to where we should be at.
But whose action item is it? I guess that's what I'm asking.
Fire department.
Okay, so this
one. We don't have a Greg Martin interested.
So, but one of the interesting things, Rochester actually jumped up 50 places in the state. We're 50 places better than we were not too long ago. And I'd like to say it was because we did something really good, but, and I think Dale knows this too, the reality is it's because the Public Works operations building, which is incredibly well done, came in, and it's weighted by a number of square feet in the city, and that's over 300,000 square feet, so it made us look a lot better. But all of the buildings where we are really not doing poorly are buildings that are probably going to be replaced or updated relatively soon. I mean, that's the airport main terminal, Mayo Civic Center, Rec Center, Public Works, the downtown building here, and then the Bio Business Center, which I think there's a little bit of a quirk because we have to run some pumps frequently there, but our really bad buildings are getting filtered out of the system, so I thought that was good.
Just a request. I know I've got it bookmarked. Could you send that link out again, please, to the rest of us?
You bet. I will send it to Mr. Quinfold. I don't want to go to jail.
See, I walked by Howard Express.
I'll forward it all comment.
All right. As it should be.
Thanks. All right, thank you.
Well, so we're going to have a meeting with the council.
Thank you for coming.